Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Thief by Danica Dark, narrated by Nicole Poole. Chapter 1.
Who took my slipper socks?
I grumbled from my bedroom floor. It was as clean as a whistle beneath the bed. Before getting up, I glimpsed them underneath the papasan chair in the corner.
Nobody took them, Mercy. You just don't know how to keep your room clean.
After grabbing my blue socks, I sat in the round papasan to put them on. The oversized rattan chair had a fluffy cushion, which made it a cozy spot to lounge. A sheer canopy, which I'd fastened to the ceiling, draped around me. Fairy lights were stitched into the fabric, giving off a magical glow whenever I turned them on at night. For the past month, our pack had worked on erecting a stable for Tack's horse. We were also still clearing out nettles, poison oak, deadfall, and other hazards around the house. In my free time, I focused on my bedroom. Though the walls were insulated, the doors weren't. I'd chosen a central room to distance myself from Melody and Lakota, who squalled like cats in heat when they made love. The trade-off was listening to Virgil sing at night, but that I didn't mind so much. He had a beautiful voice that often lulled me to sleep. My room was in the second hall off the primary hallway, which cut straight through the upper floor. No windows meant extra wall space to hang pictures or shelves. I would also never have to worry about anyone crawling into my room while I was asleep. The linen blanket covered my bed like white chocolate, accent pillows and muted tones decorating it like candy sprinkles. While I had nowhere near the same artistic talent as Robin, who could sketch a cathedral blindfolded, I dabbled here and there with a sponge and a little paint. My walls were a blank canvas, except for the one behind the bed. I'd chosen pale blue for the sky and shaped the puffy clouds as realistically as possible. Blue was my favorite color, especially light blue. I gazed at the cloudscape, the imagery transporting me to a peaceful place in my mind where troubles and fear didn't exist. A knock sounded from the door.
"Mercy, are you in there?" Robin asked. "Come on in."
Our pack respected one another's privacy and didn't enter bedrooms without an invitation, but Robin was my first visitor and I wanted to show off my hard work. She peered inside. Her shaggy haircut suited her heart-shaped face and made her green eyes stand out.
"Dinner's ready."
"I was fixing to come down for supper as soon as I found my slippers. My feet are as dry as a bone from running around barefoot."
Robin's gaze darted around as she entered. Instead of lounge clothes, she still had on the khaki shorts and black tank top she'd been working in earlier. Her summer tan was never more evident than when she walked around barefoot, her feet two shades paler.
"That's a cute chair. I love what you've done."
Her words faltered when her gaze fixed on the wall to her right.
"Is that wallpaper?"
"I painted it," I proudly confessed.
Her jaw slackened.
"It's gorgeous. I had no idea you painted."
"I don't. Not really. I can do walls, but nothing like what you do. A few sponges hardly make me an artist, but I think it looks real pretty, don't you?"
"I'll say."
"Can I ask you something?"
"Shoot."
Robin touched her cheek, still staring at the mural.
"Could you paint one of our walls?" Montana's version of decorating is mounting a hook for his hat.
I half smiled, tickled by the trivial things they must have argued over.
"Most men don't have a lick of common sense when it comes to decorating. Did you see what Virgil tried hanging in the game room today?"
Robin rolled her eyes.
"You mean the abstract erotic art from the 1970s? I had to stare at it for a few minutes before I realized it was a couple in the 69 position."
"There was a lot going on in that painting,"
I agreed.
"I know we only have so much space in our bedrooms to fit our belongings, but that abomination has no place on a public wall. It's not that I don't appreciate art. I just don't want to see fellatio while I'm playing Scrabble. He needs to put that in the storage room,"
I said, referring to the one by Joy's bedroom. "Tack said there's no reason to be using the storage rooms yet. He thinks if we slip stuff in there now, it'll encourage pack rat behavior. I guess it's harder when you're older and have more stuff. If anything, it'll force everyone to reevaluate what's important."
She put her hands in her pockets. "What about you? Will all your belongings fit in here?"
"I gave most of them away, but kept a few odds and ends. Virgil's holding on to an entire century of bad art. He doesn't want to sell it, so he's sneaking it around the house.
She turned away from the bed and peeked inside my near-empty closet. Are these all the clothes you own? It's so barren here except for the stuff you bought at Moonglow.
I brought whatever would fit in the top case and saddlebag of my scooter, and it wasn't much. I could have attached more bags, but I was afraid they'd fly off on the highway. All my personal things were put in storage.
I glanced at the two boxes on the floor that had recently arrived. My whole life fit into one storage locker, the smallest one they had. I finally got around to having my things shipped here.
Any clothes?
No, just a bunch of old sentimental papers and knickknacks. She shut the closet door and leaned against it.
I know what you mean. When I left Dax, I had 5 minutes to decide what to pack. Then I realized none of it mattered except my sketches and photographs. Even Montana didn't have much, since he traveled extensively for work. It's nice starting over from scratch.
She crossed the room and offered her hand.
Let's go see what Bear cooked for us tonight.
I smacked my lips just thinking about it. I'd never met anyone who could whip up a meal as tasty as my mama's home cooking. Not until Bear. He had a natural talent, and I tasted the love he put into his food.
When we reached the bottom of the stairs, Montana ran into us and stopped to kiss his lady.
How's my girl?
He asked between kisses.
I missed you.
She wrapped her arms around his neck and stood on her tiptoes.
Since 30 minutes ago?
Want to skip dinner?
He asked in a deep, growly register. His hands gripped her behind as he walked her into a wall.
You are worse than a wolf in heat, she said after another kiss.
They were absolutely smitten with each other, still in the honeymoon phase of their relationship. Despite his serious demeanor, Montana was easygoing and brought out Robin's silly side. Robin was serious and introspective, but their personalities complemented each other like peanut butter and jelly. Leaving them to smooch in the hallway, I turned left toward the corner kitchen. Upon entering, I passed the large hearth on my right, which was on the wall connecting to Bear's bedroom.
Does he have a fireplace, too?
Through the arched entryway ahead, the cavernous dining room easily accommodated a growing pack. Just to the left of the entrance were three square tables we used for late-night drinks or card games. They were less formal than the two long oak tables where we had our meals. The dark stain on the wood matched the ceiling and floor. Thanks to the recessed lighting, the ambience at night was that of a romantic getaway.
"Who put up those pretty lights?"
I asked, noticing a string of decorative lights around the long row of windows.
"Guilty as charged," Hope said from behind me.
"Aren't they charming? It's so gloomy in here at night because of the dark windows. Some restaurants in Austin have patio lights, so that gave me the idea."
She patted her hair, which was pinned up in a bun for a change, and studied the table setting.
"Do we have toothpicks?"
From across the table, Archer scooted back his chair as if given an order. Hope gestured for him to stay seated.
"Stay there. I'll get them."
The Arrowhead pack didn't have assigned seats. Not yet, anyhow. It was first come, first served. I liked that much better because it gave everyone a chance to get to know one another. Since all 14 of us fit at one table, we rarely spread out. Freshly picked sunflowers filled two clear vases, their yellow petals adding color and cheer to the setting. Tack often picked them for his maid, and by her blushing smile each time she accepted them, I guess they held a special significance. Though several bowls of food were on the table, Bear still hadn't presented the main course. I yawned while pulling out the chair next to Joy. She was busy untying the belt on her pink floral robe, which she wore over her clothes.
"I feel like a car that's run out of gas," I said, slumping in my seat.
Joy put her arm around me in a motherly fashion.
"You look exhausted. Maybe you should go to bed early."
"I might do that."
I yawned again, this time more noisily.
Virgil rolled a grape between two fingers from the chair opposite me. He had tied back his hair, but a few wisps hung loosely, as if they were strategically pulled free. It was a dirty shade of blonde with warm brown hues mixed in. Most of the time he just styled it with his fingers.
"If you keep doing that, Shortcake, I'll toss one of these in your mouth. Stop yawning. It's contagious."
"What do you care?"
"We're going to Dragonfly's after dinner. Drinks are half price. Lakota's lending us his truck, and Chris is the designated driver."
He clapped Chris on the shoulder.
Isn't that right?
Chris grumbled while setting his glass of water down. He slanted his arctic blue eyes toward Virgil before stroking his goatee. Virgil, who was sandwiched between the two cousins, grinned smugly.
You lost the coin toss, my friend. Doesn't mean I can't bitch about it.
Chris growled.
You don't need booze to have a good time.
Virgil countered, his smile thinly veiled.
Says the man who gets wrecked every time we go out.
Virgil leaned his head back and looked at Chris's waist.
You should go upstairs and change before we leave. What the hell for?
When Chris went out, he always dressed like he was going to a BDSM club. Lots of black, lots of leather, and sometimes jewelry. He still wore black attire at home, but without all the chains and leather. Virgil put his arm around him.
You have a hole in your belt in the wrong place.
Chris knocked his arm away.
Maybe you should stop staring at my ass.
Virgil shimmied his shoulders and feigned an indignant look. I put my napkin on my lap.
If it bothers you so much, why not just stay home and drink? It'll save you money.
Virgil lifted the labradorite pendant around his neck and pressed the smooth stone against his bottom lip.
Where's the fun in that? Besides, half-price drinks means more women.
Archer chuckled and grabbed a chicken breast from the serving dish.
How many women do you need? As many as it takes,
Virgil replied.
I'm not a man easily sated. My sexual appetite requires a feast with lots of variety.
His blue eyes twinkled with a mischievous glint. Archer snorted.
It's a good thing you're not human, or you would have contracted a disease by now.
Virgil rolled his eyes upward.
Thank the fates. If there's one thing I'm glad about, it's never having to worry about condoms. I tried one of those once when they came out with the flavors, but it felt like I was wearing a scuba suit on my...
Tack cleared his throat, killing the sex talk. I took a gander at Archer, who looked especially handsome. His shorn undercut was cleaner, indicating he must have been to the barber recently. Archer's bleached ends gradually blended in with his naturally brown hair, the top long and styled forward in textured chunks. While Virgil talked excitedly about his expectations for the evening, Archer tugged the collar of his soft leather jacket, which he only wore when they went out. Sure, some bars were chilly, but I suspected the real reason he wore it in summer was to conceal his missing arm. Bear leaned over the table and set down a second platter of fried chicken, which had a sear that would have made any southerner proud. Instead of breading, he seasoned his meat with a mixture of spices that elevated it to perfection. Occasionally, Bear would put the food on the other table and we'd fill our plates buffet style. But mostly we set the bowls in front of us and passed everything around, which I preferred since it felt more like a family dinner. I leaned to the side and caught my reflection in the window, the overhead lights doing me no favors. Sometimes we used candles because others found them romantic, but all they did was remind me of childhood when we used oil lanterns.
I love this table, I said, admiring the smooth finish.
While claiming his usual seat at the left head of the table, Tack said,
All from that big oak tree we cut down. It's unfortunate to destroy something so old and majestic, but it posed a danger to the house.
After setting the toothpick dispensers on the table, Hope pulled out the chair to Tack's left and sat across from her brother. You were right. I'd much rather have this beautiful piece than a swing.
No one says you can't have a swing.
Tack sipped his glass of ice water and smiled.
My girl is finally coming home tomorrow.
Hope used tongs to put a corncob on her plate. Only because you bribed my former packmates to help finish the stable in record time, all without my father knowing. If he finds out, he'll be displeased. Tack buttered his garlic roll.
Yes, but I'll have my mare back.
Hope shook out her napkin. Sometimes I think you love that horse more than you do me. Tack flicked his eyes up to her in amusement, then leaned in close.
The sooner I get my mare back, the faster I can build the heat house.
He waggled his eyebrows, putting a blush on her cheeks. Melody yawned loudly as she entered the room. I glanced over my shoulder at her black leggings and jean shorts. She'd sewn purple material to the leg openings and back pockets. Melody's bold personality was reflected in her clothing line, and she always experimented with designs. She didn't focus on marketing to a specific age group, so the clothes ranged from sophisticated to funky. Hope often modeled Mel's classier pants and blouses, testing out the fabric and fit for women with curves. Melody pulled out the wooden chair next to Hope and straddled it. "What's for dessert?"
"We haven't eaten dinner yet," Hope informed her.
"I'm not that hungry."
Lakota put a piece of chicken on his plate.
"Then just eat a little."
Mel twirled her hair around her index finger.
"I had a big lunch."
"Don't start with that again, female."
Lakota finished spooning a few pieces of okra onto the plate.
"You promised to eat something. Dinner first."
He stood and handed her the plate of food he'd made.
"Peach pie later,"
he murmured, his fingers grazing hers. She gave him an amorous look.
I wondered what the story was between those two and peach pie, because they brought it up every so often, and Barrett only made it once.
Catcher's toenails clicked against the floor from the kitchen entryway as he circled the table, sniffing each person he passed. Robin occasionally gave him a plate at mealtime, but Catcher hunted during the day and rarely ate at the table. He usually found a spot behind either her or Tack and would listen to us chatter. It was a difficult adjustment, having a shifter around who always stayed in animal form, but Catcher had proven himself trustworthy. He had fought bravely for our pack, putting his life on the line. Bear pulled out the chair to my right.
"Mind if I sit?"
"Help yourself," I replied. After he sat down, he lowered his voice and asked,
"Is there something else you'd like for dinner? I can make it. No trouble at all."
Salem and I were the only ones with empty plates, but Salem always waited for Joy to finish before he started. "No, it's not that," I said, hoping my listless attitude didn't offend him. "Work is taking a toll on me. I nearly had a heat stroke this afternoon while clearing out debris." Tack knocked on the table to gather our attention.
"Why don't we take a vacation? My horse is coming."
"Again with the horse," Hope quipped. He flashed a grin at her before directing his comments to the group.
"Hard work is good for the soul, but your souls look like they were dragged through a swamp. Take a break and sleep in. You deserve a respite."
He swirled the ice in his glass.
"Hope and I are leaving town for a couple of days."
Montana's head appeared next to Bear.
"What for?"
Lakota leaned forward and met eyes with Montana.
"Mother's Day. My parents are flying down from Cognito, so we're having a get-together. Lucian's coming, too. That means you'll be in charge while we're gone."
No one had officially proclaimed Montana as the third-ranked wolf, which was known as the Gamma, but it was inferred. He was rational, calm, and a problem-solver, so we looked to him for guidance and leadership when Tack and Lakota weren't around. Joy set her fork down and wiped her mouth with a napkin.
"That's so sweet. Do you have anything special planned?"
"A famous Weston cookout,"
Melody replied while poking at her chicken.
"That's the name of my family's pack. When they throw a party, they do it with gusto. After we pig out and catch up on family gossip, I plan to take all three moms on a shopping spree at Moonglow."
"That's a lot of moms,"
Virgil remarked.
"I'm closing the store early," she went on. "That way they can have it all to themselves. It sucks that they're always buying things to support us when we don't need their help anymore, so we're treating them to anything they want for free. Especially Lakota's adoptive mother. She lives out of town and never gets to shop in our store."
Lakota tore open a roll.
"Is that what you think?"
"That's what I know," Melody stated.
"So your employee didn't mention an order for a cat purse she shipped to Cognito?"
Melody set down her fork and frowned.
"The one with the black cat on it and the mismatched eyes?"
"My father calls your employee every 2 weeks to get the scoop on new inventory. Then he relays it to the family. Her best friend bought the purse and had it shipped up there as a surprise. My mom used to have a cat that looked like that."
"So that's where the purse went."
Melody sat back and shook her head.
"The receipt didn't have a name on it. You've got a sneaky family."
After picking up her utensils again, she turned her attention to Joy. "Anyhow, it's going to be a few days of food, wine, and shopping. Mainly just the girls. My aunt also arranged for a spa day. That's not really my thing, but I suppose my legs could use a wax." Lakota sputtered with laughter. Joy picked up her silverware and sliced her chicken.
"It sounds like a beautiful celebration."
I caught a bend in her voice. Mother's Day was a human holiday. Most breeds didn't acknowledge those holidays because they raised complicated emotions.
All vampires eventually lost their mothers, for instance. And even though shifters had healing magic, pregnant women couldn't shift to heal. That led to pregnancy and childbirth complications, which weren't uncommon. We were semi-immortal and could die in many different ways, so it was unrealistic to assume one's parents would live forever. Joy was older than me, and I wondered about her past. She had a kind and nurturing spirit, always thinking of others and checking in on everyone. I guessed she had lost her family, and they must have been good people to raise such a sweet and gentle woman. Yet she never discussed her home life in depth, only bits and pieces. To be fair, we were all still getting to know one another, and it wasn't easy opening up to people. Bear stabbed a savory chicken breast and filled my plate.
Cast iron chicken with my special seasoning. If you're tired, it's because your wolf needs protein for energy. You like okra?
I could listen to Bear read an instruction manual on refrigerator repair. His smooth Texas drawl and deep voice was sex on a stick. Since most of our packmates were city folk, we had formed an instant connection. That didn't mean I was a country bumpkin who had never experienced life. At 103, I was no spring chicken. Speaking of chickens, wake up and eat. Bear filled my plate with fried okra and pinto beans. I declined the grilled corn and garlic rolls after deciding it was more than my stomach would accept. Bear's food was so delicious that I finished the sides before touching the chicken. After swallowing the last bite of my okra, I said, "This is incredible." He tilted his head and smiled, his brown eyes twinkling.
"Wait till you taste my thigh."
Virgil snorted and continued dissecting his roll and dipping it into the pinto bean juice. While everyone else used utensils, Archer ate his chicken with his hand. Cutting meat took longer for him since he only had one arm. If it was boneless, he usually chopped it up with a knife first. Tonight's chicken was easy to pick up and eat, but he'd had a difficult time the other night when Bear served bone-in chicken breasts in cream sauce. When Joy had offered to cut his meat for him, he isolated himself in silence for the rest of the meal. I watched Lucian across the table to my right, scrolling through messages on his phone. The screen illuminated his face, and his blank expression didn't give the slightest hint at what he might be looking at. Had his family sent pictures? Immortals avoided photographs to prevent discovery, but phones with password protection changed everything. Lucian had recently shown me a family photo of his brothers, all of whom possessed desirable cheetah traits of light hair and tall stature. Cheetahs weren't shifters, and the name wasn't even spelled the same as the animal. Their breed had stereotypical physical traits that were not only considered desirable among their own kind, but were also the standard. Being defective, with dark hair and a shorter stature, must have been tough for Lucian, both now and growing up. It explained his reclusive personality. That man spent more time with his surveillance cameras than he did with his packmates. Of course, packmates weren't required to be sociable. Cheetahs and shifters didn't usually live together, but we had a similar nature and way of life that centered on family. We shifted into animals, whereas they had a primal animal inside them that governed their behavior. It created unique physical traits in them that came out when their emotions were heightened, such as the upper and lower fangs and cheetah-like spotted pattern. Maybe because of that underlying thread, we understood each other better than most breeds. As long as Lucian joined us for meals and pulled his weight, he fit in just fine, aside from having the personality of a snapping turtle. Lucian didn't possess a filter between his brain and his mouth, and in any debate he always presumed he was right. Chris was similar, only he had the personality of a vicious honey badger.
"I want to build a fence,"
Tack announced, which silenced the chatter.
"That field behind the house is good for grazing, but I need to keep my horse penned."
I swallowed a bite of chicken. "I hope you don't mean one of those barbed fences."
"No, nothing that will injure her or our wolves,"
he assured me.
"I have an idea,"
Lakota piped in.
"We can build a wooden rail fence without the bottom slats. It'll be tall enough to keep her penned, but the opening at the bottom will give our wolves easy access at night when we're running around. Why does your wolf need to be in my horse's field?"
Lakota set down his glass.
"Maybe he'll be tired after a run and not want to walk all the way around. Maybe he's lazy."
The two men tittered like schoolboys. Tack wiped his mouth.
"Now that the stable is done, Perhaps I'll divide the jobs. Virgil can oversee construction of the heat house while others build the fence. I first need to call the contractors to level the ground and lay the foundation.
As much as we needed a heat house, I preferred a hotel. A woman's scent changed while in heat, and it drove men wild with lust. Simple biology. Even mated shifters got aroused by the scent. They wouldn't act on it, of course. But what about the rest? Would the temptation drive them to knock on my door? Those without a shred of decency might try, so how could I trust these men not to seduce me? I had never lived in a pack as a full-grown woman, so I had concerns. Heaven help me if Virgil Nightingale wanted to be the savior of my hormonal firestorm. Would I have the common sense to deny him? If not, I'd have little Virgils running around. Outside of rare instances, heat is the only time a female shifter gets pregnant. A heat house around here would offer privacy, just not enough for my comfort level. Even with mated couples, not every woman wants to get pregnant. Without a little distance, there's too much temptation otherwise. Only sex can alleviate the terrible pain. It's a primal calling that turns our ovaries into the dick whisperer. Common sense goes out the window.
How was it?
Bear asked, snapping me out of my musings. Delicious. I bumped my shoulder against his thick arm. You should open your own restaurant. He held up his fork and examined his okra.
I wouldn't go that far.
I would,
Virgil said, eating his chicken with his bare hands the same way Archer was doing.
If you have a talent and nothing's holding you back, use it. I despise cooking.
He dropped the chicken bone onto his plate and licked his fingers.
When they first invented TV dinners, I lived off those for a decade. And back then, we only had two or three options.
Have you been to a grocery store lately?
Archer finished swallowing his roll.
How many types of cereal does a person need? I spend more time looking than buying. Then I wind up with those variety packs so I can have it all.
Virgil pulled a bone out of his mouth.
Story of my life.
That reminds me.
Tack began.
Bear has plenty of meat in the freezer, so I don't want anyone hunting deer. I saw a fawn at the far end of our property when I was out yesterday, which means her mother is grazing nearby.
Lakota set down his glass.
In other words, don't kill Bambi's mom on Mother's Day. Exactly.
Wolves are predators. Though we have no control over our wolf's actions, we communicate our wishes to them. Since most shifter animals can smell a new mother, we avoid them. Maybe it's the human in us that steers our wolves away from the kill, or maybe it's that our wolves aren't hunting for their survival. Lucian craned his neck and searched the bowls on the table.
Are there any onions?
Lakota took another piece of chicken from the platter.
I'm putting you in charge of the onion garden. How's that sound?
That remains to be seen.
Lucian muttered.
I don't garden.
You will.
Tack said, inviting no argument.
Some of these foods we can grow ourselves. Onions, tomatoes, cucumbers, okra, peppers. Why am I throwing away money on store-bought vegetables that someone sprayed with pesticides, and then you pay extra for them to hold the chemicals?
He pushed his empty plate forward.
Lakota never mentioned his uncle had an onion addiction I'd have to support.
Everyone laughed, except Lucian. Getting familiar with my packmate's habits was a real hoot. Lucian devoured raw onions like nobody's business. Hope enjoyed morning strolls and getting lost in her thoughts. Chris had an unhealthy obsession with checking the locks on all the windows, even in the daytime. Salem always had his nose buried in a book while nibbling on black licorice. Joy sneaked out at night to catch lightning bugs. And I'd probably seen Virgil in his underpants more than any other man. I was thinking about getting a job, I blurted out. Everyone hushed. Did I say that out loud, while we still have work to do around the house? Tack flicked his dark eyes up and stroked his chin.
What kind of job?
Nothing that'll steal me away from pack obligations, I promised him. But I'm not used to manual labor. You healthy boys fling tree stumps like you're at the Olympic Games, and I'm barely able to push a wheelbarrow. I've worked hard outside and haven't complained once, but now I'd like to help with the interior. We need furniture and rugs so we have a place to gather besides the dining table. All these empty rooms need a woman's touch.
That's exactly what I'm hoping for tonight,
Virgil said with a lecherous grin.
A woman's touch.
Rob.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?